Stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live. But first, hi, I'm Pastor Bob Enyart with our Denver Bible Church update. Something interesting happened to Jesus. His responses and the responses to his disciples were, well, not what many Christians would expect. In the Gospels, in Matthew chapter 15, a Canaanite woman came to Jesus. You know, the Canaanites and the Jews, they were longstanding archenemies, basically. The Canaanites symbolized the wicked Gentiles. And this Canaanite woman came to Jesus. Not all the Canaanites were evil, but the vast majority were. And this Canaanite woman said to him, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed." When a Christian hears that, they tend to think, if they don't know the story specifically, they just know generally about Jesus, they think, well, Jesus is going to help her. You know, because she said, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed." But in reality, what Jesus did was he ignored her. The Bible says he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Lord, what are they going to urge him?" You'd think, you know, a Christian might think, well, they're going to urge him to help her. But actually, it's the opposite. They said that she's embarrassing us. Get rid of her. His disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she cries out after us." But Jesus answered and said to them, and a lot of Christians would think, well, the story is a little unusual, but now Jesus is probably going to rebuke his disciples for being so rude against this Canaanite woman. But no, Jesus agreed with them. He answered and said to them, "I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Jesus is saying, my Father sent me only to the Jews. He didn't send me to the Gentiles. And the Canaanites, they were Gentiles. And so she pled with him, "Lord, have mercy on me. My daughter is severely demon-possessed." Jesus ignored her. His disciples came and said, "Lord, she's embarrassing us. Get rid of her." And he agreed with them. And he said, "I was only sent to the Jews." And then this woman is an extraordinary woman. She didn't give up. Verse 25, then she came and worshiped him, saying, "Lord, help me." Now that has got to get to Jesus. But look, he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." That's harsh. That is harsh. And she said, and this is what makes her one of the greatest persons of faith in all the Bible. And she said, "Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table." And that blew Jesus away. He said, "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire." And her daughter was healed from that very hour. But it's one thing to be happy about the conclusion, because she had so much faith and she touched the Lord's heart, he healed her. But why did he resist? And why didn't he rebuke his disciples for their attitude toward her? Why? And why did he say he was only sent for the Jews? Throughout his ministry, he avoided the Gentiles. He tried not to help them, except for a couple times when they just really had a lot of faith. It's because God had called out a nation, Israel. Like you might have a spokesman, God wanted to have a spokesnation. And Jesus came to get Israel, to bring the message to Israel, so that after he rose from the dead, so that Israel would take the gospel message to the world. So when Gentiles came to Jesus in the Gospels and they wanted help, the Lord's response was generally to ignore them, or to say, "I'm here for the Jews, I'm not here for the Gentiles," because he was focused. And focus is so good. Have focus on your mission. And his goal was to come and, of course, live and die and be raised from the dead to provide for our salvation, and then to get his people to bring the gospel message to the world. Well, what happened then? Well, stay tuned. Now, stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live.
Service with a wink and a nod.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed, right-wing, religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800, boy, that hasn't changed in 12 years. 1-800-8-N-Yart, that's 1-800-836-9278. President Bush and his advisors have shied away from endorsing a constitutional amendment protecting marriage as a union between one man and one woman until today. Until today, Tuesday, December 16th, 2003, President George W. Bush said that he may support a constitutional amendment to outlaw homosexual marriages. And if I had my opportunity on a day like this, when the president brings a constitutional amendment to the front of the news, what I would like to do, if I could do whatever, anything I'd like to do, I'd like to talk to the world's leading expert on the ramifications of public acceptance of homosexuality. And who would that be? Well, I think in my 12 years of being on the air, when I've needed to get some really hard-hitting information, I've turned to the Family Research Institute and their chairman, Dr. Paul Cameron. Dr. Cameron, I want to thank you for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
It is an honor to have you on, Doctor. I've done my best to take your research and bring it to our audience over the years. But now that you're on tonight, you could help me do this. Doctor, to begin with, homosexual behavior throughout history, what has been the judgment of history toward homosexuality?
Well, we don't know what's happened everywhere, mm-hmm. but we do know what's happened in the West. And pretty much what you find is homosexuality, if it becomes prominent, is associated with the decline of a culture. Mm. It's not the only thing that's associated. A drop in birth rate, and women in particular, if you would, sexually fooling around and not honoring their marriage vows and not getting married.
Right.
Those are the things that lead to social collapse. Mm-hmm. And we're on our way. But whether we'll get there or not, well, let's hope not.
Right. Dr. Cameron, last week we had Alan Combs on the show, co-host of Hannity and Combs.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him about adultery, about the time in our history when adultery was against the law. And he indicated that he had no knowledge of that, that he didn't know that adultery was ever against the law in American history. Clearly, homosexuality was also against the law until the 1900s. When was it that we began to legalize homosexual acts?
Well, the first literal abandonment of making it illegal was 1962.
All right.
But if you look over the history of the country, you notice that in the colonies, by and large, being caught in a homosexual act got you the death penalty.
Yeah.
It was a capital crime.
Yeah.
But it was no capital crime in any state once the states got organized, except if you were a slave.
Hmm.
And then by around 1840 or thereabouts, you began to see various forms of liberalization. Now, we're not talking about making it legal. We're not talking about celebrating it. But the penalties, generally speaking, started to decline.
Right. And in fact, Thomas Jefferson wanted to remove the death penalty for homosexuality when he was the governor of Virginia.
Right.
And he proposed a law that would do that for the apportioning of crimes and their punishment. And he was... By his law, homosexuals would be castrated.
Right.
And the Virginia state legislature voted down his law and kept the death penalty.
Right. But eventually that, too, went the way of all flesh. And, of course, since 1962, that was just the beginning. And bit by bit and piece by piece, between various Supreme Courts and overturning by the legislatures, sodomy is now legal. You have a situation, clearly, where there's a long-term social trend. And one of the people, a homosexual who put his finger on this was none other than a fellow that got caught as a teacher fiddling with his class homosexually. And that was Walt Whitman. And even then, though he could have been in prison for years, he was merely, and I say merely, tarred, feathered, and denounced from the pulpit and literally ridden out of town on a rail. But he was not imprisoned. He had violated some of the boys in his class, but he was just kicked out.
And he's a hero to this day.
Yeah, we have one of the major bridges named after him just outside of Philadelphia. We have all kinds of school kids learning about him being the greatest American poet, as he liked to call himself. Mm-hmm. And, of course, our most famous president, recent president, Bill Clinton, gave his Leaves of Grass book of poems to just about every paramour he ran into.
And so our culture has celebrated homosexuals, including, tragically, homosexuals who were also pedophiles. There was one sex researcher who seemed to, in his research, he wrote about young children, young boys, and how they behaved sexually in great detail. And he was celebrated as a brilliant researcher when obviously he was a homosexual child molester molesting these kids and recording in his diary how they responded.
Well, I think you're talking about Kinsey. I'm not sure that he actually molested. He took boys on scout hikes and so forth, so I suspicion strongly he may have.
Do you recall the there's a book out, I think, and a video, The Children of Table 34?
Right. The downside is that if you actually try to tie the knot and say, did he do it, there's pretty good evidence that he didn't, but that he took the word of others, definitely, who were child molesters and kept records of same, and used that and put them into, as you say, Table 34 in his male volume.
All right, so you're saying that we don't have the evidence to conclude for sure, to prove, like in a courtroom, that he was a pedophile.
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
He certainly was very friendly to all forms of homosexuality. And Kinsey said one thing with which I profoundly agree, and I'm sorry that Americans as a whole are unaware of it. Hmm. And that is, Kinsey rejected the notion that there was such a thing as a homosexual. Certainly, there was such a thing as a homosexual people. And if you'll look at this newest decision by the Massachusetts Supreme Court, and for that matter, the U.S. Supreme Court in Lawrence just a few months ago, you have the belief somehow ensconced in the legal profession that homosexuals are a people, like blacks are a people, like Indians are a people, etc. And that's simply not true. As Kinsey pointed out, there were plenty of people who took up homosexuality for a while and quit it. There were other people that dropped in and out, and other people that stuck to it.
So it could be a transient population. People move in and out of the homosexual community. I remember back in the early 90s reading a statistic that said most homosexual male adults in America had been married.
I don't think it's that high,
right,
but it does look to be about 40-35%, and among women who pursue homosexuality, it's certainly a majority.
All right.
And what you find is, particularly with women, but also with men, if you say, well, how many people who are homosexual, that is in the sense that they engage in homosexual activity, how many of them have sex with the opposite sex? Now think about a man. What does he have to do to have sex with the opposite sex? And I'm not going to be graphic here, but I think we all can understand this.
Right.
And you have to have some interest. You just can't do it.
Right.
And lo and behold, only both in Kinsey's survey and our survey, as well as in the most recent surveys across the world, you have those who engage in homosexuality, and usually under 10% have failed. Only 10% or less have failed to have sex with the opposite sex.
have never had, so that the vast majority of homosexual men are attracted to women.
Attracted enough to have sex with them, and many of them have been married, and many of them are married. Time after time, you'll see a sting set up in a public park, and men are caught, and if there's 50 men caught, bet on it. One of them will be a man of the cloth, usually an Episcopalian. There'll be 10 or so that are married. Quite a few, there'll always be a couple of school teachers and principals and so forth in the mix. And what you find is that these are people from a fair diversity of walks of life, and many of them are married. Many of them have children. If you go to the bathhouses, many of the men in there are married. They have a wife at home, and they have children at home.
And they bring diseases home to their spouses.
That's right. That's, they share the wealth, biological wealth that they pick up in these pestilent holes.
Yeah, one point of contention between Alan Combs and me last week was that I was saying that when a man enters into a marriage contract, a covenant with his wife to be her exclusive partner, then he's violating that contract when he goes out with another, with someone else, and he brings her a disease, and our government has legitimized that. We've said it's fine. We have no-fault divorce, and we've legalized adultery and homosexuality. And
that's right.
On and on, actually.
Yeah, and one of the things that's happening, and I know you've shared this with your audience, but I think it's important to note that I think there are two big facts in the homosexual arena that people are unaware of. The first we've already touched on. There really is no such thing as a homosexual. That is, a person who has to engage in homosexual activity and can't engage in heterosexual activity. There aren't any. And, by the way, a very large, terribly well-done study with 100,000 respondents was reported just this last year. And the correlation between having a homosexual inclination, being interested in homosexual activity, the correlation between identical twins is the same as the correlation between fraternal twins, is the same as between brothers, is the same between blended brothers, that is, with no biological relationship whatsoever, except that their mother and their father used to be married, and now they're married to each other.
So that if identical twins... that if homosexuality was genetic, we would expect to see a high ratio of if one identical twin is homosexual, there'd be a high likelihood that his brother or sister would be also.
Right, at least a much greater likelihood.
Right.
And in this instance, the very best study in the field, and by the way, the chaps who ran this were no conservatives, they were liberals, but they had to admit there was no evidence whatsoever of a genetic component.
Wow.
Now, that's one fact. The other fact is people don't know what homosexuals do. And that, I think, is a great shame. Because when they don't know what they do, it looks almost as though God or nature has conspired against them. Here comes AIDS, HIV, raining down from the clouds, and it just seems to hit homosexuals. Why? And I've talked to dozens and dozens, and I'm sure you have too, of people who simply cannot understand it. Why do these poor people who are just expressing their love end up with this dread disease and all these other diseases? And the answer is that, as clinically as I can put it, these fellas are engaging in biological madness. When you put a male sex organ inside the rectum, you are just asking for trouble with a capital T. The kinds of germs that you can run into, think about what the rectum is used for, biologically speaking. And then realize that the same rectum is designed to absorb particularly water, but literally any kind of nutrient or any other kind of substance that gets in there.
So that, could I interrupt here to see if my thinking is accurate? I've noticed over the years that a homosexual man who has AIDS, say he's well known, and he's married, say Magic Johnson. Or over the years, I've noticed that the wives of men who have AIDS often have not contracted AIDS, whereas they might give it to 50 other men in one-night stands.
Sure.
So there's a biological danger, a huge risk factor, in just the homosexual behavior.
Yes, and the homosexual receptivity, the kind of sex act that they typically engage in. One of the things that is nice, it isn't totally protective, obviously, because heterosexuals get, besides HIV, they get gonorrhea and syphilis and so forth.
Right.
But if you'll look at the two organs, the vagina and the penis, the vagina in particular is a very hardy organ. That is, it's made up of tissue that is difficult to infect, and particularly if it's a blood-borne infection, such as syphilis, such as HIV. If you have sex with a rectum, by George, you're in trouble because the rectum is designed to absorb. Mm. It is very thin and fairly fragile, so that what you're asking for if you engage in that kind of sex is all kinds of biological trouble.
So that before it was called AIDS, I recall back, it must have been the late 80s, it was called gay bowel syndrome.
Yeah, it was called GRID, Gay Immune Deficiency Syndrome. And then, of course, the homosexuals said, no, it makes it sound as though we're the cause and we're the only ones getting it. We're not. And that's sort of true. But even as smokers are the ones that primarily get lung cancer, so homosexuals are primarily the ones that get AIDS.
Yeah, we did
a show. That's the way it goes.
Yeah, we did a show on that this month, that just as lung cancer is a smoker's disease, AIDS is a homosexual disease, and the group that you hurt the most by denying that is homosexuals.
Yeah, that's one of the funny things, isn't it? The political movement thrives the more they die, the more they agonize, the more they can write about how terrible their lives are. Hmm. But their lives really are terrible, and they really are dying by the bucket load.
Yeah, which is now... Back when America was so barbaric that we had the death penalty for homosexuality if someone was convicted of the behavior, I wonder if we had tens of thousands of people a year being put to death.
No, in fact, as near as I can tell, we're looking at one or two put to death every year for all the colonies.
So one or two a year versus today. We've lost. How many people have we lost to AIDS? Do you have a?
It's roughly just under 500,000, and of homosexuals, about 300,000. So, literally, homosexuals have killed each other at a far higher rate than when what they were doing was illegal, and the state ended up executing them.
Yeah, so that as in so many instances, like somebody could say when God in the Bible said adulterers should be put to death, that God was being cruel. And I imagine God, if he was here to defend himself, would say that when adultery becomes epidemic, people slaughter themselves in huge numbers. And crime and suicide and kids who grow up without a mom and a dad. And so that the having homosexuality as a criminal act could be merciful to hundreds of thousands of people who would otherwise destroy themselves.
Yes, the law is an instructor as well as a punisher. And most of us, I think, hearken to what the law says. We don't want the punishment,
right?
And so we don't do it.
How about the lifespan of homosexuals? I remember your research back in the early 90s, and I'm wondering if you could bring the audience and me up to date.
Well, it looks like it's getting a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
That is, the drugs that they're giving for AIDS and so forth seem to have added a year or two to their lifespan, and of course we're collecting more data, but it looks just about certain that the average homosexual, male and female, lives between 20 and 30 years less than a person who doesn't engage in homosexuality.
20 to 30 years less. So that in America, a U.S. lifespan is...
into the 70s.
75.
Sure.
If you're married.
That's right.
Right?
If you're married, you have all the best of it. If you're heterosexually married, conventionally, traditionally married, mm-hmm. married people outlive everybody else. But interestingly, especially for gays, if they get married, that is, if they have a partner, if anything, they tend to die a little younger. It's no real advantage. In fact, if you look at AIDS or any other bloodborne disease, because homosexuals in partnerships engage in more intimacy, that is, of a biological sort, they're actually more apt to get AIDS if they're married, quote unquote, to each other, than if, for instance, they're literally married to a woman or just flit around from park to restroom or whatever.
Right. Now, doctor, we've got a couple minutes till the bottom of the hour. Would we be able to extend your time with us?
Sure.
Okay, great. But let's take this time now to give out your website at the Family Research Institute.
Yeah, we're at www, of course, familyresearchinst.org. That's familyresearchinst.org.
All right.
And we have our phone number is 303-681-3113.
Okay. And, doctor, over the years, I have stated on this program that homosexuals, they actually do reproduce sexually. Male homosexuals do, by molesting children.
Absolutely. And so do females, though it's typically more subtle and more linked to, I guess you would say, gals that boys don't find attractive, sometimes are seduced by wanting someone to love. Likewise, if a little girl is molested by a man, more often than not, she becomes heterosexual, but she has a disproportionate chance of rejecting males in general for homosexual relations.
Mm-hmm.
Male homosexuals, on the other hand, are very good at recruiting. Every study that's done shows that somewhere in the between 20 to 30 or 40% of all molestors are homosexuals, and that they out-molest heterosexual molesters by quite a fraction, usually so much so that more boys are being molested now in the United States every year than girls.
Well, now that is startling because I think traditionally it's only been about a third of the children who were molested were boys.
That's right. It looks like we have a fairly sharp uptick.
And that would be because male homosexuality has been on the rise. It's become so much more common so that we're seeing many more boys molested.
That's right. And there are some other factors that we have to throw in. For instance, one of the best predictors of whether or not your child is going to become a homosexual is whether or not you live in a big city. Let me say that again.
Mm.
If your boy, if he's raised in a big city during his early teen years, he has about treble the chance, three times the chance of getting into homosexuality than if you don't live in a major city.
Mm.
Now think about that. What's going on here?
It doesn't sound biological.
Nope.
Or genetic.
Nope. And what I think you'll notice, Denver, Los Angeles, New York, they all have pro-gay hiring policies in their school districts. They all have pro-gay hiring policies
right.
in their bureaucracies.
Well, Dr. Cameron, could you please hold on now? We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Sure.
And we're thrilled to have Dr. Paul Cameron of the Family Research Institute. We'll be right back. Bob Enyard here with a live commercial break. Now, right now, only those of you listening via KGOV, KGOV, can hear us. So this is sort of a little intimate fireside chat here. And in 30 seconds, our Denver KLTT audience will join us. But, hey, we've been having a lot of success with our debate, Does God Exist? 170-page debate, Bob Enyard versus Zaketh. I'm going to tell the Denver audience, too, about this when they join us in just 10 seconds here. But have you read the debate yet? It is fun. Welcome to our Bob Enyard Live listeners in Denver, Colorado, and elsewhere. We got calls, on the air last night from Phoenix and a call today from Idaho, somebody listening. And this is a live commercial break. We're on KLTT. 50,000 watt, 670 AM. And one of our hot sellers for the past few months has been Does God Exist? Bob Enyard versus Zaketh, Battle Royale 7. This is a 170-page manuscript, a debate, a 10-round moderated debate that was held before a live audience, so to speak, over the internet at theologyonline.com, and it was the seventh in their series of battle royales, and what a battle it is. Does God Exist is the topic, 10-round moderated debate, and Zaketh is the resident atheist at Theology Online. Well, he was. Somebody over at TOL is going to have to let me know if he's shown his face much lately. But what a debate! What is the evidence for the existence of God? How do atheists respond to that evidence? Well, if you'd like to have more information at your fingertips when you talk to unbelievers, check out this debate. Call us, 800-8-ENYARD. By the way, that order number, 800-8-ENYARD, 800-836-9278. You could also read about that debate and 100 other products, titles, on our website at kgov.com. That's kgov.com. And now back to the chairman of the Family Research Institute in Colorado Springs, Dr. Paul Cameron. Again, Doctor, welcome. I'm really thrilled that you're with us.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, so let's see here. I just did a live commercial break, so I got to get my attention back on our task here. We're talking about the danger of raising kids in major cities, and of course, big cities are known to be sort of hotbeds of homosexual behavior,
right?
And therefore, disease and also depression and crime seems to be tied up with the homosexual lifestyle. But even kids, I didn't realize, but I guess all I had to do was think for a moment that, but kids are three times more likely to go into the homosexual lifestyle if they're in their teenage years, they're living in a major city.
Yes. Now, exactly why has not been parceled out, mm-hmm. but I'm fairly sure that if you look at the environment, homosexuals are about 3 to 5 times more apt to live in major cities. That is, there's a much greater density or homosexual footprint in the cities. Mm-hmm. That's where the parades are, et cetera. That's where you have all these pro-gay hiring policies, et cetera. And, of course, children are going to be subjected to many more homosexuals in their environment, either knowingly or unknowingly. Mm. So that's one of the things that city dwellers, and most of us are now, have to think about and be on the lookout for. We got to keep our kids away from these folk because these folk want our children. Hmm. They want them very badly.
They want our children. I think, Dr. Cameron, the last time I interviewed you was about 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was on radio in Denver. And in the intervening years, I'd been on TV also for maybe 6 years or so, and we had a call in September back in the late 90s from a woman in Tulsa or outside of Tulsa, and she called up. She was almost in tears, and she said, that her little boy came home from kindergarten and said, "Mommy, the teacher kissed another teacher." And she said, "Well, that's fine. They're probably married." And he said, "No, Mommy, it was a man." And he had a male teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't believe him. And the next day, and she called me the second day of school that night, and she said he came home the second day and said, "Mommy, he kissed that man again in front of the class." And my statement to the mother was, "Ma'am, you are the luckiest public school mother in the country today, because it only took you 2 days to find out that they want to destroy your son."
Yeah, and notice something about homosexuals. Those who engage in homosexuality are very different and have been different down through the years in regard to violating, I think, what anyone can see is nature's plan. You don't see drug abusers saying, "We want to have a drug abusers parade." Mm. You don't see adulterers saying, "Oh, come on, let's all get together and have at least one day every June in which we celebrate adultery."
Right.
You don't find, you just don't do it.
Right.
But homosexuals, on the other hand, even when it was illegal, they wanted to have a parade. Mm. And if they shut their mouths, they generally wouldn't run into any social difficulties at all. And yet, think back to the first major suit. I think it was in 94. Guy works at Richfield Atlantic, and he leaves a graphic description of what is going to happen at a party that he's going to have, and to which he's inviting a bunch of friends, on the copier. And his colleagues find that piece of paper,
right,
the invitation, are aghast, and you got it. You remember this? He won, I forget how many, millions of dollars because he was discriminated against.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he was swiping, he was stealing the company,
the company resources.
You know, materials,
right,
and so forth, doing it on his employer's dime.
Right.
And if he'd just been discreet about it, who knows who's committing adultery? Who knows who's doing whatever? But if you want to parade around about it, hey, what's wrong with you, fella?
Mm. Well, and so what's happening now is our society has gone through stages where, for example, on primetime TV, the programs, which were many that had homosexual characters in them, the homosexual would be the only cast member, the only character who was honest, forthright, you know, true to his word, moral, faithful, and everyone else would be liars and cheaters and thieves. But now I think that they've had so much success in repositioning homosexuality that now the homosexuals are beginning to be the bad guys in Hollywood productions because they feel that comfortable that they've so indoctrinated generations of Americans.
Yeah, I guess I haven't noted that as much as the former.
Right.
But some of that's true. Mm-hmm. But if you look at, we have some people in the family who are into this, as probably every extended family does.
Yeah, we do too.
We have friends who have that situation. I've had clients in that situation. And quite frankly, I've never met one yet that I would consider to be moral or ethical except for his homosexuality or her homosexuality. There probably are such people out there, but I don't know if your listeners have heard this. Maybe you don't know about this. But just a few years ago, the Centers for Disease Control ran the largest sex survey ever done of a random nature in the United States of America. Mm. Over 12,000 people were interviewed. And it turns out that one of the things you could figure out is how homosexuals scored on this. For instance, the government asked two questions of people. In the last 30 days, have you missed your employment because you were sick or ill? Or, secondly, because you just didn't feel like it, you wanted to take a hike? Hmm. It turns out that both men and women who engaged in homosexuality were appreciably about twice as apt to have missed their job in the past 30 days than people who don't in, or didn't engage in homosexuality. Isn't that interesting?
So
in other words, they're poorer employees. They are less apt to show up for work. And yet in many jobs, you get, well, you're really not docked if you don't go to work.
Mm-hmm.
You're considered a professional or as a courtesy. You know, you're allowed so many days of sickness and so forth.
Right, right. And so, and in my observations, the homosexual community has high incidence of alcoholism, drug abuse, suicide, domestic violence. And so what I think's going on is while our culture heaps praise upon homosexuals, whereas it mocks right-wing conservative Christians, we can see that the homosexual community, the homosexual psyche, is it's self-destructive.
Yes. It's self-destructive, and it's socially destructive. Hmm. They don't go to work as often. Obviously, if you're not there, you're not going to produce as much, certainly not on average. And you're right. The same government survey run by the Centers for Disease Control, you couldn't ask for a more, pro-homosexual organization,
right.
Found they were about three times as apt to be taking illegal drugs. They were about twice as apt to be driving under the influence. You name the grief, about twice as apt to have a criminal history. You name the grief. You name the psychological problem. They were about twice as apt to have psychological problems. Here's a group of people who cause problems for themselves and cause problems for society, and yet have gotten away with the notion that, well, shucks, we have to do what we have to do, you know, and just accept us after all.
It seems to me if I'm in almost any social setting outside of my conservative right-wing Christian circles, if I utter one negative syllable concerning homosexuality, it's like I've got these, if looks could kill, these daggers are going at me. Whereas if a homosexual walks into the room or it's known he's a homosexual, just that makes him into a hero.
Yes, he's being honest. And there's something strange about our society right now.
Yeah.
We put an enormous premium on being honest. Well, it's good to be honest and forthright. I would say that's a bit of a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're being an honest adulterer, an upfront thief...
Yeah, you're bragging about it.
No holds barred embezzler,
right.
What does that make you?
Right.
It makes you, on the one hand, that ought to make you a fool.
Mm.
It ought to make you rejected by others.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to give it to them. They've got a lot of chutzpah to be able to say, if we just proclaim time after time and loudly as we can and wherever we can that we're being discriminated against just because of the way we love, people are going to come around our way. It's working.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is working. And even churches, even our conservative leaders and Christian leaders are scared to death to say anything negative about homosexuality. Even when it comes to homosexual marriage, they will not say anything negative about homosexual marriage. They'll just say, for cultural reasons, I believe that a marriage should be a one man and one woman.
Yeah, I'm afraid that just isn't going to cut it. The Christian church, you don't expect the church as a whole to spend a great deal of time on homosexuality or embezzlement or murder or what have you.
Right.
But here we have a culture under attack, under assault, by people who are engaging in a particularly heinous sin, a very great public health problem. And I think it's time to stand up and be counted. And among the things we ought to be saying is certainly no one who comes to church regularly ought to walk out of church ignorant of the threat that these people and this lifestyle poses to them, much less the culture as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
The threat that it poses to their children, much less to the culture's children. And that both of us, I think, see that even the evangelical churches are, by and large, very squishy on this issue.
We here at Bob and Yurt Live, and the same is true, I think, at Denver Bible Church for most of the people who go there. I pastor Denver Bible Church. We have our strategy regarding homosexuality is threefold, and it's re-stigmatize homosexuality, recriminalize it, and work to help them to repent. Whereas most of Christianity, to the extent that they even acknowledge it's sinful, only will talk about repentance, and that's it. And I think the church doesn't realize that because we have destigmatized homosexuality and we go out of our way to honor them, that we're encouraging more and more young kids to try it out.
That's true. And the evidence seems to be accumulating that it is working that way.
Mm-hmm.
The best evidence of late seems to indicate a decided uptick in the percentage of males who are engaging in homosexuality. It could be that it's even doubled over the last decade. And among females, it looks like it's gone up a good 50 or 60%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, still a very small portion of the population.
But it's
thank
not.
Goodness.
I remember in the late 80s, early 90s, conservatives frequently say that homosexuals were only 1% or 1.5% of the population. But on the air during the 90s, we adjusted that upward somewhat significantly because it seemed like it became a fad for girls and middle school, high school, and college to be bisexual.
Yeah, to give it a try. And this is one of the great problems that we have to acknowledge, that while everyone probably can't be attracted to homosexual activity, most people could be.
Hmm.
Maybe even everybody could be.
Mm-hmm.
Think of Sodom. What was going on in Sodom, apparently, was rampant homosexuality.
Right.
And I don't think they were genetically different. They apparently had let their guard down enough.
Yeah,
and they were exploratory. And
right. It's conditioning.
Yeah. You can learn it.
Right.
And if there's enough of it, if it's talked about enough, if people see enough examples like that little boy in kindergarten, if he saw those men kissing, you never know. Even one kiss might catch his attention. For instance, we know that there are now people out there who get a wild hair that they've got to have their genitals mutilated so they sort of look like the opposite sex.
Right.
Shucks. Oftentimes, if you look into the history of these people, it was just one event, one instance in their life, and somehow they decided this is the way they were going to go.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few people out there that want to be mutilated. They literally want to have their arm cut off or their leg cut off or their foot cut off. Once again, this is being done in the name of mental health, and as near as we can tell, most of these people just saw somebody or had an experience and this caught their fancy.
Mm-hmm.
You never know when a child is exposed to X whether X will just kind of hit them the right way.
Mm.
And that's why I think this little boy, this kindergarten child, is terribly disadvantaged. He's at danger. He's at risk that something is going to happen to him by that kindergarten male homosexual teacher. But he's also at risk because he's having homosexuality modeled for him
right.
by this chap. And while this particular teacher may not fiddle sexually with this boy, he's definitely fiddling with his mind.
With his mind, exactly. And so today, with even our conservative Christian leaders in America who have conceded the battle, I think, when, for example, Colorado for Family Values with Amendment 2 back in the 90s, their slogan was equal rights for homosexuals, not special rights. And I think conservative Christian leaders have done more to further the gay agenda than the homosexual movement because we have forgotten that homosexuality was against the law. And we concur as a Christian community, Our leaders concur that homosexuality should be legal.
Pretty much, I'm afraid, especially organizations like NARTH and Focus on the Family and so forth seem to be just taken with the notion that, well, these are people that they're kind of born that way or learn that way, whatever it is.
Yeah, they may not say they're born that way, but they should have equal rights.
Yeah. And,
right. And if they should.
And what they do should not be criminalized.
If they right.
We agree. They
yeah. If they should.
We'd be better off if it were recriminalized and suppressed as much as is possible.
Yeah. If it were. If they should have equal rights, then homosexuals should have the right to create the textbooks that are taught and then teach the kids in kindergarten and coach the boys' wrestling team and do everything and hold hands and smooch in restaurants. That's what the conservative Christian leaders don't realize that they've conceded.
Well, in many respects they have, though not, I think if you put it that way, many of them would say, well, I don't mean that.
Well, Dr. Cameron, I've tried over 12 years on the air. Now, I don't get the James Dobsons of the world, but I get the second and third tier Christian ministries, like, say, Morality and Media, their president, Bob Peters, who was on the show this past year. And he even goes so far as to say that pornography should be legal. In other words, we've conceded, we're pro-choice, that things that were sexual crimes, the Christian church has, we have legitimized and declared them legally valid. Adultery, pornography, eventually prostitution will go that way also.
Well, Christians differ on this. Remember, European Christians took a different tack, and there are Christians in Nevada and so forth. So whether it should be suppressed one way or the other is always a good argument. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend a lot of time there.
All right.
But if you're looking at homosexual activity, if we allow people to define themselves as a people who have to, as a people, engage in homosexuality, then any talk of equality is just absurd. Mm. If you say, well, should all American citizens have equal rights, you and I would both agree to that.
Right.
But they also have equal obligations. If the law says, thou shalt not steal, everybody should has the equal right to steal and get punished and put in a slammer for it, and likewise for homosexual activity.
Once you commit a crime, you have the right to a fair and speedy trial.
You got it.
So your rights are narrowed then.
That's right.
Dr. Paul Cameron, I wanted to let you know on a personal note, you probably know the story in New Jersey where a homosexual couple changed the law to adopt children. In fact, they were on Good Morning America, front page of USA Today, and the first child they adopted, they called Adam. And that's my first cousin, Michael Galluccio.
Really?
Yeah. And so in our country, in our family, I've been fighting the battle as strongly as I can against homosexuality to warn people. And my first cousin and then other relatives we have been aggressively fighting to normalize homosexuality.
Yeah, I'm afraid that I don't want to get into the personal things that have happened in our extended family, but analogous to that.
Right.
And I think this is happening all over. And part of the problem is that we are often, probably it's the American way of doing things. You say, well, it's their thing. It's not that my thing. It's just not that big a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to suggest that homosexuality is a big deal. If you're a Christian, it's writ very, very large in the scriptures, very, very large in the history of the Christian church.
Right.
And if you are interested in public health, it's also a very big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about Christianity. Think about people that are having sex typically with at least dozens of people per year.
Mm.
And having not just regular sex, but the most dangerous form of sexual intercourse.
Mm.
They're spreading diseases, and now we live in a totally different world than in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Wow.
Back then, there were no planes. Back then, there were boats, but they didn't go very far, and they certainly didn't go traveling around the world.
Mm.
we find ourselves now in a brand new biological universe.
Where one male stewardess could spread AIDS, start an epidemic in a dozen major cities, and see thousands of people die before his own death.
That's right. And from all over the world, we see people interacting with slaughtering animals and getting infected, and those infections coming our way. Think of SARS, just happened the last flu season. We'll see if it kicks up again. It may well. But behind SARS, there are literally dozens of new diseases, many of which you and I don't even know about yet, but they're heading our way. If there was ever a time for people to be very cautious sexually, if there was ever a time for people to say, you know, the safest place for me personally and the best place for my society is for me to confine my sex to a married relationship, this is that time. We are in a dangerous time biologically, and the society that is smart enough to put the hammer down on promiscuity, homosexual activity, as well as just fooling around amongst heterosexuals is going to do a lot better in the long run.
We're almost out of time, a couple more minutes, but Dr. Cameron, I wanted to let you know, in Arvada, there was a few years back, a city council member who had an operation, and it was a Joan, and it ended up a Joe. And I got to debate this, I don't know, man, woman, what I call it, in a studio at an FM radio station downtown Denver. And right before the show, it's in the studio, it spilled like a big gulp on the table in the studio. And it was quite a mess. And what this person did was take its purse and open up its purse and scoop the pop into its purse. And it dawned on us, my friends and I who were in there, that this is not a woman. No woman in the world would scoop pop into her purse. This is a guy, no matter what its driver's license says or how it's mutilated its body, this is a guy.
That's right. And by the way, if people go to our website,
yes,
www.familyresearchinst.org, INST.org, one of our newsletters, I think the current one, deals with this very issue. And of interest, with very rare exception, these are people who have gotten a wild hair. They've just gotten a notion. When they were children, they were not, generally speaking, trying to be people of the opposite sex. And today, as you point out, they are not real males. They are not real females. What they are is mutilated males or mutilated females.
So, Dr.
That's the way they think, and that's the way they are.
So, Dr. Paul Cameron, if someone goes to your website, they sign up for a newsletter. Is that the best way to find out more?
Sure. We'd love to have them. But take a look at the newsletter on the website, and we have, well, if it has to do with sex or drugs, almost certainly you're going to find it there in Family Research Report.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Paul Cameron, for fighting this battle for all these years. You've been a great asset and resource to those who love God and the truth. So thank you for your work.
You bet.
God bless you. And it's an honor to have Dr. Paul Cameron back on the show. He made a lot of enemies early on across this country in the homosexual community, in the media. But he has stayed the course, and he's not been intimidated. And his work has been published in refereed scientific journals. And he's just an excellent source of information that will help people live and not die. And that's what the gospel is all about. I mean, we're going to die physically, and God will save us spiritually if we repent. And the gospel, it's not just the spiritual issue. It's how we live our lives. Hey, this is Bob Beignet reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.